You can be different by constantly feeding your mind with things that you wouldn't normally put in your mind. And that gives you new knowledge, new experience, new perspectives. And those things together give you the ability to come up with ideas that people normally don't have the ability to come up with. And that makes you, I guess, superhuman at coming up with ideas. So spot things that other people don't spot, and then you can have ideas that other people can't have.
Well, hey everyone, this is Scott, and thanks so much for downloading the latest episode of The Scott King Show, where I talk with sales and marketing leaders from all over the world on how they are building their brands and growing their businesses. Dave Burr spent the majority of his career in the world of advertising, both as a copywriter and an art director. He ended up leading the creative departments of some of London's biggest and best agencies. This experience led him to writing more philanthropy and video production. Dave's latest book, How to Get Great Ideas, proposes a new theory of creativity. It explores what makes some individuals more creatively productive and shows how businesses can encourage creative thinking in the workplace. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott, and hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, and thanks for joining me. I read How to Get Great Ideas, and I really enjoyed it, and I love that you kind of suggested that it should be a handbook and kept handy. But the first question I have is, one of the first things that I noticed in the book is you dedicated your book to everyone that's felt like an outsider. What is that all about?
Well, one of the things that I talk about in the book is that what really results in people coming up with not very adventurous ideas is conformity. And people who conform to a norm of a social group or a peer group or their work group or their church group or whatever, if they're conforming to that group, then they're an insider. And these are the people who are very strong insiders are the ones who aren't that great at coming up with ideas. It's the people who are slightly different, the ones who've got different perspectives on things, the ones who see life slightly differently, they're the ones who tend to be better at coming up with more interesting and more valuable ideas. So I've always felt like an outsider. I guess in some groups I'd be an insider, but in general, I've always felt like an outsider. And I think that that's one of the things that has probably made me all right at what I do.
That's interesting, though. You know, I get it now that you explain it that way, insider, outsider. You know, why do you think that is? Why are businesses and employees kind of conforming to the inside norms? Is it fear? I don't want to be an outsider. I want to be included. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's always fear. But I mean, there's evolutionary reasons for it. So if you were to imagine that we were Paleolithic humans out in the wilds tens of thousands of years ago, that if you were part of a group, then you had a good chance of passing on your DNA. But if you were a loner, you were an outsider, you didn't fit into that group, there's more chance of you passing on your protein to a wild beast. So it meant that it actually became an evolutionary selected trait. Because there was more likelihood of you passing on your DNA if you were able to fit in to a group. So it's there's that reason for it. But then obviously when we're in the workplace, we have this incredible urge really to be like others around us. We don't want to stand out. And part of it, as you're saying, is fear. And what that does is it means that everyone thinks the same way. They all end up with the same assumed knowledge. They all do things in a similar way. And all of that stuff, it ends up that if you've got similar input and you've got similar processes, then you're going to get similar output. And if that means that all these people who conform within that group are coming up with pretty much the same ideas, their ideas are pretty valueless because anyone could come up with them. It's the ideas that are new and different are the ones that are going to give us value. In marketing sense, it will help us differentiate ourselves. It will help us stand out. And from a business sense, it's the stuff that can give us an advantage over the competition. So that's why, to me, it's really important that we manage to break away from the urge to conform if we want to be great at coming up with ideas.
Yeah, you talked in the book about inputs and outputs and processes and kind of drew it back to computers, how they just kind of compute information. You know, talk to me a little bit about the inputs and outputs, and then how far from the norm should I look for different inputs, right? So I'm thinking, you know, people always call me the king of analogies because I'm always comparing everything to everything else so I can talk to my audience, right? And they can make sense. You know, how far outside of the normal input do you think that people need to look, right? So if you want to combat the conformity, like, is it extreme? Is it slight? You know, I will go to the extremes. I'll tell you that. But, you know, cause I fear not. And, so I'm kind of curious, like, do you guide people on this, or what advice would you give to someone listening that is, hey, I want to find a new idea, but like, I don't know where to look.
Right. So it's what makes a valuable idea, I guess, is what we need to get to first. So how far do we diverge, from normal thinking? Well, for me, if you imagine two axes, and they're creating a matrix. So on one, you've got value, and value is, you know, that's one axis. We want our ideas to be valuable, and the other is non-obviousness. And I have to use the negative there, because at the lower end of it is obviousness. Any idea that's obvious is an idea that anyone could have. Any idea that's non-obvious takes a bit more work to get to. So what we find is that most people in business play in the relatively obvious area and not in the super high value area, because once you get to the high value, it's things that differentiate you and give you an advantage, as I'm saying. So what we're looking for is to be in the quadrant that has got is non-obvious and offers us value. That's the stuff that can really help us in business. Now, to get there, as you're saying, it's if you imagine that we've got Venn diagram circles here. And the circle is, the main circle that we've got is all about conformity, and it's the culture. Everything inside that circle is everything that's considered to be normal within the culture of that group. If you've got another circle that slightly overlaps from that group, then the more that you move that out, the less it's going to overlap. So anything that's outside the circle is the stuff that is non-obvious. Anything that's inside the circle is the stuff that's obvious. So as we overlap those circles and this circle that represents what's your own understanding of life and your own way of doing things, there needs to be some overlap between what you have and what the group has, so that there's a level of understanding and a level of value. But if there's too much overlap, you're going to be too obvious. If there's too little overlap, you're going to be not relevant enough. So you're right that there is this Goldilocks zone, that that these areas have sufficient overlap, but also there's sufficient difference, which allows that person to explore the area outside the norm of the group. I don't know. I was waving my hands around as I was doing that. I was holding my fingers in little circles. That was really bad radio, Scott. I apologize.
Well, I mean, if I was writing down, so if it. But I didn't write down that you were waving your hand, so thank you for the visual.
So I don't know if that answers the question about sort of value, but you also mentioned about the computer analogy with input, process, and output. And we've got to understand that our brains are processors. I'm not saying they're computers, because they're not computers. They're imprecise, and they're temperamental in a way that computers aren't, and which is one of the things that makes us special. It makes us more powerful than computers, the fact that we're a bit unpredictable. But input, process, output, when companies ask me to help them come up with ideas, very often they look at process and they say, can you teach us some brainstorming skills? And I'll go, well, for a start, you shouldn't be using brainstorms, because they've been proven to be absolute nonsense. I can show you some ways of coming up with ideas in groups. But if you want to really make a difference to the kind of ideas you come up with, it's all about your input. So if you imagine that you've got a really awful data set, and you've got two computers, you've got a Raspberry Pi, which costs about $30, and you've got IBM's latest supercomputer, and they're both running sort of the same algorithm to deal with the data. If you put your crappy data through both of these computers, they both give you crappy results. Now, if you've got a great data set and you put it through both these computers, they'll both give you great results. It's just that one will do it slightly faster than the other. Now, the thing there is about the quality. It's not about the time. It's about the quality output that you get. And hopefully that can explain that the input is more important than process. So if people all have the same input, they're all going to have pretty much the same output. But if you want to be able to come up with ideas that no one else can come up with, you have to be putting things into your head that no one else is putting into theirs. And when you were asking about this sort of breadth of input that you put in, then if you're looking at if your input is what your company is doing, then you're not going to come up with any interesting ideas. If your input is what the industry is doing, then you might come up with some stuff that will be new to your company that other companies are doing in your industry. And that could be valuable, but not completely valuable, because it means that you're still lagging behind other companies. Then if you look beyond that to what other industries are doing, then that starts to become quite interesting. You can start to come up with stuff that could be new to your industry, and those things will differentiate you and give you an advantage. You can even look beyond industries to even learn from nature, to learn from science, to learn from whatever you want, from fiction. And these things, again, you might be able to take ideas from there that you can apply. And I'm talking about taking ideas because it's not always about coming up with your own ideas. Very often there's a biblical quote from about 2,500 years ago that says there is nothing new under the sun. And it's pretty much true. I don't think there's many things that I can look at so that I can say that was really new. Most things are a recombination of existing elements. So if you're able to take from someplace else and combine it with what your needs are, then that's how you can come up with a really interesting and powerful idea. I answered quite a few things that you said there, hopefully.
Yeah. Now, and you know, one thing that I wanted to get to that you just did was, you know, there's no such thing as a new idea. It's just reuse of an old one or a combination of ideas. You know, it seems that, you know, we've kind of instilled that into our cultures, into our work cultures. And you did mention time. We, you know, a little bit. We didn't really talk about time, you know, how long it takes to create one of these new ideas, or, you know, should it be on one of these graphs? Because, you know, we build these cultures of work environments to kind of, you know, conform. Yet, you know, you're kind of talking about the opposite, where, you know, we need to look at different industries or outside of different industries, or look at different areas of science to come up with new ideas. You know, that's not really something that people talk about a lot at work, right? It's all about conformity and culture.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's interesting you use the word culture, because I think that we have, there's two things that I think are big problems in business at the moment. One is culture and one is productivity. And this is when it comes to innovation and when it comes to ideas. So for culture, I think that people have misunderstood culture, and a lot of companies are trying to copy what the cool companies are doing. You know, get the foosball table, get the fluorescent colored bean bags, you know, have this cool room in your office. And they're continuing to disrespect their employees from 9 to 5, but they're thinking that these extra things they're doing and having an occasional drinks night, or let's all go out bowling together or whatever, they think that these things are what culture is. And culture is not that. Culture is the understanding, the collective understanding that people have of that company. You know, it's your relationship as an employee with that company. And it's the 9 to 5 stuff is far more important. So the other thing that comes to that then is productivity. And the last employed job I was in, I was expected to be utilized over 90% of the time. I believe the figure they were aiming for was 93%. And
is this an ad agency, like billable hour type of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you're all about the doing, it doesn't give you much time for thinking. If you're all about trying to give output within that time, you're neglecting the input and which I'm saying is really important, the input. So it actually ended up, I believe, that the drive to productivity has got a poisonous effect because it focuses people on doing. Now, doing means that, you know, you can't really get ahead of other companies just by focusing on the doing. At that point, you're only looking for small efficiencies. When you do thinking, thinking is what can really differentiate you. Thinking is what can put you ahead of the competition. Thinking is the most valuable thing you can do in the office, in the workplace, or working for an organization. Yet productivity doesn't focus people on thinking, it focuses people on doing. And I've got a real problem with that. And I think that it's one of the reasons why I've looked at the advertising industry, and I feel that it's not as it's not doing some stuff that was maybe as exciting or different as it has done in the past. And I think a lot of that comes from this focus on productivity and on the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which means that everyone has to be accountable for what they're doing at every minute of every day, which, again, becomes really difficult because that focuses people on doing when, in fact, the sitting back and thinking is the most important part.
Yeah, it reminds me of the hustler mentality. You know, you got to hustle all the time. You got to work all the time. You got to be productive, but you're just busy being busy. You know, you're not really creating a new idea. You're just producing stuff that gets placed on websites, that drives up ad costs that people don't look at, that drives ad blockers, that, you know, and on, you know. But, yeah, you know, a good idea is, you know, the things that you see just everyday people producing online that gets, you know, picked up by everybody else. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the homeless guy handing out resumes to do, you know, job interviews or whatever, right? Or cat videos. I hate cats, but it's that type of thing that gets picked up that just kind of raises itself from like the busy work that everybody is busy producing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that said, sorry for ranting. I didn't expect to do that. But I'm kind of curious for you to help us define what is a great idea. Maybe what's the greatest idea you've seen that somebody came up with that was outside of the norm, or, you know, one that you produced, right? What was some of the great ideas that you came out with that, you know, were so non-obvious? Do you have any examples?
I won't share any of my own ideas, I don't think, but I will. I mean, there's so many stories of how people have come up with incredible, non-obvious ideas. So, I mean, one of my favorites is, which I think has got a real analogy to most workplaces, was Alexander Fleming, who was a Scottish biologist who was working in London, and he was doing some work looking at the Staphylococcus virus, which is a virus that most of us carry in our throats already, but there's a few different strains of it. And he was growing these Staphylococcus bacteria in Petri dishes in his lab. And then he decided to go off on holiday for 2 weeks. And he came back from holiday and he realized that he had forgotten to put one of his Petri dishes into the incubator. And it had a big lump of mold growing on this Petri dish. Now, most people would go, ah, dash, dang it all. Here we go. I've made a mess of that. And we just throw it in the bin. But instead, he was curious and he picked it up and he had a look at it. And he realized that there was a little gap between the mold and the virus. And it's like, why is there a gap between these two things? Why hasn't one overtaken the other or one grown on top of the other? Why is there that gap there? And that was how he discovered antibiotics, because that was the penicillium mold that was growing inside that Petri dish and discovered that resisted the virus. Now, that's incredible that he did something that most other people wouldn't have done in his position. Most other people wouldn't have been curious enough to look at that thing, which would have been considered to be a failure. He had failed with that Petri dish. But by looking at it and examining it and asking why is that, he developed penicillin. And, you know, it's since then, with syphilitic patients high-fiving in the streets, with people with gonorrhea partying all night long with happiness, you know, he completely changed the world and has saved hundreds of thousands, probably millions of lives, by just picking up that Petri dish and having a look at it. So that to me is one of the non-obvious ways that we can come up with ideas, is just by being curious and asking why, by not looking at things as failures, but looking at them as unusual results, and then going, what can we learn from that unusual result? And if you have that attitude, you will do wonders for business.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. I've never heard it explained that way, but you know, I knew where you were going with Alexander Fleming, and I was like, hey, this is perfect. This is perfect. So Dave, what do you listen to or read to you know, gain new ideas? What are your various inputs to stay inspired? Anything specific?
I'm ridiculously broad and curious. So I'll be reading, at the moment I'm reading a graphic novel. I'm reading some Arthur C. Clarke. I'm reading some factual books as well. I use Blinkist. I don't know if you know about Blinkist. It gives you a summary of books in about 10 minutes. So I will sometimes go through two or three books a day. And as I go through, I'll write down notes of things that I'm interested in from it. So I've always got input going in, and input's a really important thing for me, but I'm always trying to pick up new skills as well. So at the moment I've got on my desk, I'm building myself a guitar effects pedal, so I've never done that before. I've got my soldering iron out, and I just need to solder it all together, and hopefully that's going to give me like a Hendrix style fuzz box for my guitar. I'm also learning watercolors at the moment, and I'm constantly, you know, I've picked up programming languages and all sorts of things, so I'm always teaching myself new skills, because it's not just about knowledge. Your skills are how you process things, and your skills are, they give you a perspective on problems, different ways of looking at it. So I'm always building up skills, always building up knowledge, and you know, I'm not trying to make myself seem as if I'm some smug superhero kind of guy who's like got this incredible ability to do stuff. I also slack off, and I think it's really important to wind down, to have those quiet moments. I think that one of the most powerful things for creativity is boredom. So when you get bored, you know, that's when the ideas will very often start coming to you, because you want to do something more interesting. And also going for walks and cycles and exercising. That's a phenomenal way of, it cleans out your brain when you get your pulse racing. So it actually cleans away sort of chemicals from your brain. It puts more oxygenated blood into your brain. Exercise, like prolonged exercise, like running and cycling and swimming, that gets your heart rate up for a period of time, has been proven to produce more neurons in rats. So we assume that it does the same in humans, which means that you've got more neural matter going into your brain to build up new memories and skills and new patterns in your brain, all because you exercise. It gives you this incredible advantage. So it's all these things together are good for us. But, you know, just sitting back, eating junk food and watching the Kardashians is probably the opposite.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like riding my bike for hours at a time, but I didn't realize that me riding my bike would produce more neurons in rats. No, I'm just...
I mean, you take your rats with you, or you leave them at home. Yeah,
no, I leave them at home, but...
Is that why you don't like cats?
Yeah, maybe so. So if you... Dave, sorry about that. If you didn't have any responsibilities at home or work, and you weren't already fixing, you know, your guitar pedal, watercoloring, or programming, what else would you do with your time? If you just had like total Dave time, what would you do?
I've got so many things I want to do. You know, spend the time writing poetry. read more books. You know, I probably what I really need to do is actually just lie down and relax, or try and relax. But every time I do that, I end up having to scribble into a notebook with all these things that come to me. So I don't know if I've got it in me to relax and unwind. And I think that all the stuff that most people would do in their downtime, I'm kind of already doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I would do. I just find more things to do.
Yeah. And I think more people need to, you know, just have that downtime, you know, and disconnect and do something physical. You know, I love the watercoloring. I did that in elementary school before, but,
yeah.
But, you know, I really enjoy that type of visual art because it does exercise a different part of your brain. So,
it so does. Cool. There's also this, low level use of your brain that, you know, if you're washing dishes, if you're ironing a shirt or you're doing something like watercolors, it's, you know, it's not taking up like your whole brain. It's quite low level, tasks that you're doing. And they've discovered that it's at these moments or when ideas get fired to you, when that eureka moment is most likely to happen, when your back brain that's already been working and stuff will then find the opportunity to fire something to the front brain. And it's to do with these low-level tasks. So I love these kind of things. I've got a friend who does jigsaws. You know, I hate jigsaws, but I've got a friend who does jigsaws for this exact reason, is because it helps the ideas come to him, because he's concentrating on a low-level task.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. So, Dave, if anybody had a question for you based on anything they heard today, or maybe want to pick up a copy of one of your many books, what is the best way to contact you?
Well, I hide under my own name all over the internet. So on Twitter and Instagram, it's just my name, Dave Burse. So Dave, not David. D-A-V-E. And then you have to watch out with my surname, because if you misspell it, you'll get the Jewish term for the circumcision ceremony. And that's not something that you want to be doing an image search at work for. So the way that I spell it is B-I-R-S-S. So Dave Burse. And then if you go along to daveburse.com, you'll find out more about me and you'll be able to sort of get in contact with me there. And also, I'll give you a free copy of a book that's not even been released yet. If you go to daveburse.com/Scott King, then you will you'll be able to download a copy of a book called Out of My Mind, which will hopefully be released later in the year, but I'm letting you have it now.
All right, nice. Nice, perfect. Really appreciate that, Dave. And I'm glad I didn't giggle when you were talking about the bris. So, and so, Dave, any closing thoughts on what we talked about today?
Yeah, for me, being different is the most powerful way to improve your creativity. And you can be different even if you normally feel the pull to conform to a group. You can be different by constantly feeding your mind with things that you wouldn't normally put in your mind. And that gives you new knowledge, new experience, new perspectives. And those things together give you the ability to come up with ideas that people normally don't have the ability to come up with. And that makes you, I guess, superhuman at coming up with ideas. So spot things that other people don't spot, and then you can have ideas that other people can't have.
Well, perfect. I really appreciate your time today, Dave, and speaking to my audience and then offering your kind of advice to come up with great ideas. I do practice a lot of these things and will instill more on looking at different inputs. So I really appreciate your time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you all for listening. Thank you.
Hi, and thanks for listening. This is Scott King, where it is my goal to inform you how smart marketers build their brands and grow their businesses. Please subscribe to the podcast series at thescottking.com or follow me on Twitter at thescottking to grab the next link. If you like what you heard today, please go to iTunes and write a review. Always appreciate that. Thanks, and be sure and visit again.